Hello, I'm Dan Masterson, host of Strategy Talk, where we take a unique view of world events. We report news as history. With me today is the editor of StrategyPage.com and well-known military author, Jim Dunnigan. Associate editor and syndicated columnist, Austin Bay, also joins us.
Welcome, Jim and Austin. I thought this week we might talk a little bit about China. I mean, almost every time we go, I go to the website and I look at the articles that you guys are writing and like that. It seems like China's there almost every other day. And it also seems to be something that's of a lot of interest to our readers and listeners. Austin, recently you wrote about the South China Sea and what China is doing there. Why don't you recap for us and about why the South China Sea is so important to China and what the important facts are about that area.
Well, yeah, first one is location. It's South China Sea. Look where Guangdong province is, which is China's wealthiest province. That's where Guangdong, Canton is. Hong Kong sits at the mouth of the Pearl River. Move out of the Pearl River and head south, and now you're moving into the South China Sea, and it's called the South China Sea for a reason, even though it's the littoral on one side is Vietnam, Cambodia, Southeast Asia, Thailand, Malaysia, and then the other, it's basically the Philippines and the island of Borneo. That is a route for natural resources. When I talk about location, it's immediately close to China, but just take a look at all the oil tanker routes and shipping routes that funnel through the Straits of Malacca, which is Singapore, which is really at the bottom of the South China Sea, effectively. You run into Indonesia there as well, but follow it back to the Indian Ocean, and it goes to Africa and Southwest Asia, which are two of China's primary sources for the natural resources. And then the second reason, the two geographic reasons, is oil and gas fields, which are, from what I have read, their estimates vary, but they're significant oil and gas deposits in the South China Sea. They're offshore fields. That's why you find the significance of these rather small islets, the Paracels and the Spratlys. A few of the Spratlys are a little bit are larger. If you want to know where they are and you got a map, go find the Filipino island of Palawan and just move west, and you're into the Spratlys and above the, the Paracels. Now, because of the location, there are multiple claims over these islands and islets and atolls, and one of the most contested is actually a reef system. There are two contested reef systems. The contest over them is not new. In the column that I wrote, and by that, by the way, that column is a little bit of a war game. It's a simulation, and it's a simulation that's working from some certain kinds of certain facts, but also certain assumptions. So there's a column to look at that's got a real gamer's backbone to it, gamer's methodology, and I'll talk about that in just a second, I suppose. But the 1974, China attacked and took a few of the Paracels that were occupied at that time by South Vietnam, which means they were claimed by Vietnam, north and south. 1988, China had a tussle over several of the Spratly Islands, and it was a shooting tussle with Vietnam, as in Hanoi now, the People's Republic of Vietnam, People's Republic of China versus the People's Republic of Vietnam, and China won it. It was really a series of skirmishes, mostly naval power, air assets, but small infantry contingents, and China took that. Now, between 1974 and 1988, and I know this is going through Jim's mind over there, Austin mentioned 1979. I will. 1979 was huge. That was the China-Vietnamese border war of 1979. In A Quick and Dirty Guide to War, Jim and I used the figure 20,000 Chinese dead in that short but bloody conflagration. No one really knows how many people are dead, even though there have, that figure has, over the years, been somewhat begrudgingly said, yeah, that's in the neighborhood by Chinese sources. China, led by Deng Xiaoping. Deng Xiaoping, I'm paraphrasing it, you can find it on the web, but basically said China was going to teach Vietnam a lesson. China got a lesson in tactical and operational superiority by the Vietnamese army, particularly in the use of artillery. Lots of artillery traps by the Vietnamese. Essentially, it was a stalemate, but the stalemate it was one that Vietnam won. China didn't teach Vietnam a lesson at all. And Deng Xiaoping, being the pragmatist he is, said that China's got the lesson to learn. China was already moving towards modernization, and the fourth modernization was military modernization, but you can see the early 1980s right there, the beginning of China modernizing its military forces. So there have been other dust-ups in the South China Sea, China versus the Philippines. Understand that divide and conquer is a way of that China, the Chinese have been masters at that in dealing with their neighbors for, oh, I guess I'd be fair to say, you know, 3,500 years at least. And the Philippines have issues over the islands with Vietnam. Indonesia and Malaysia both have disputes about control of some of these islands. Cambodia, of all places, has a claim to some of the seabed, as does Thailand. Further south, and you've got to remember that this gets complicated too, because it, you know, Borneo has contains Brunei, the Kalimantan region of Indonesia, and I think it's Sarawak is what the Malaysians call their slice of Borneo. So you've got all three of those contestants wrapped up in there, and then Taiwan actually has some claim. As the Republic of China, interestingly enough, Taiwan politically generally backs up the People's Republic on its claim because it's a Chinese claim. Now, here's my take in the gaming component on it in the South China Sea is that China has known for at least 35, 40 years that there are likelihood of hydrocarbon deposits. That's why the action in the 1970s. China has many reasons to diversify its energy sources. Iran is not dependable. The Middle East, as we know, has stability issues, and China's getting burned diplomatically in such complex situations in Africa, Sudan, and South Sudan. You can't just sit back as China has done diplomatically and say, oh, we just want to buy, we're for whatever you want to do, because there's so many of these places that they're, and particularly in sub-Saharan Africa, that it's they're divided, they're at odds with their neighbors, and the states to some degree are on the edge of being failed states if they aren't failed states. So China's looking for something close by. And goodness gracious, right there within easy shipping distance of some of its most productive industrial zones are the natural gas and oil fields of the South China Sea. Now, there's been political reaction over the years, much of it disjointed by Vietnam, by the Philippines, in part because they have their own claims and counterclaims. Into the Cold War and the growth of China's economy, China is becoming more and more of the regional power that it has been for millennia, but exercising that power. And the Vietnamese speak of the Chinese as bullies and bullying us. Now, the Chinese have devoted a lot of diplomatic effort to keep the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, let me bring that up, that's ASEAN, which has existed for, I guess, I think at least some two two and a half decades. But the ASEAN is fine as it's a trading and political organization that's rife with the, all intra-ASEAN competition, but it doesn't want ASEAN to become a new CETO, Southeast Asia Treaty Organization, which was supposed to be the Asian equivalent of NATO, designed to contain China. Well, in a de facto way, you're seeing increasing cooperation. The Philippines really wanting to rely on the United States now. There's some irony in that, but because the Philippines didn't, the Filipinos didn't want the U.S. Navy to maintain its base at Subic Bay. Now they kind of like having the U.S. Navy back because the U.S. is a balance against a powerful China. Vietnam has made no secret for almost two decades that it wants a strategic relationship with the United States, but then there are a lot of cooperation, actually, commercial cooperation between American companies and Vietnam, but there's still the memories of the Vietnam War. This week, Dan, and that was the spur to doing this column. I've been actually done a version of it, I want to say 10 or 12 years ago, but then to do it again, given the new volatility in the region and incidents that have occurred over the last really 2 years that have shown the sharpening of knives potentially in the South China Sea. But this week, South Korea and Vietnam announced that they have signed a strategic cooperation agreement. Not lots of details, but there were two things that the Vietnamese official statement said, that it would include the cooperation on defense technology, which is a boon to Vietnam, especially having South Korea with all of its capabilities and South Korea's own indigenous production capabilities in the defense industries, and also senior officer co-training, implying senior officer exchanges. As I point out in the column, that's just one short policy step from senior officers collaborating on or coordinating planning. And that's the way it was said by both South Korea and Vietnam, was a direct reminder to Beijing that, you know, we have outstanding issues with us. And the outstanding issue South Korea has, obviously, with China is you continue to support North Korea, and North Korea threatens to nuke us. Don't do that. Now, the other player kind of back in this, other than the United States, is Japan. Japan has had issues, actually, with both South Korea and China, but with China over control of certain islands, mostly its fishing rights, but potentially oil and gas and other offshore islands. South Korea has conflicting claims with China on various maritime claims. So here's the gamers component of that column. You see by the action that China has taken, not just over a short term, not just because of the naval expansion that Jim writes about all the time going on by Chinese, not just because you hear occasionally some of the belligerent statements out of the more aggressive generals and admirals about the first line of islands and the second line of islands, and this has appeared on strategy page on that, and these maps of saying we want our influence to go beyond the Philippines or whatever. We're building a navy to be able to have that kind of reach. But add that to the action in the South China Sea, and you are beginning to see what I call an Asian pivot towards China. The playoff of the U.S. Department of Defense, quote unquote, our strategic pivot to the Pacific. Not the United States doing this. Not the United States forcing this. It's China's own actions. I think I have seen a few glimmerings too of the Chinese noting that. Some Chinese commentators saying, you know, there are ways that we can do this, kind of the way that they've been doing it in Central Asia, by the way, which is we just want to buy it. We just want to buy that. We want to work this out, and then, you know, what we don't own, we'll purchase, and because of the proximity. But you're seeing a reflection here, Dan, I think, of the division that exists between those kind of technological and economic modernizers in China saying, okay, you know, we have an interest in these fields. We've got some legitimate claims, but let's work this out because we're really interested in making money, as versus that component that has the nationalist and revivalist Middle Kingdom mentality. I guess sometimes this is called the Beijing Boys, by the way, is the term I've seen for it, centered around the military and certain very hardline communist apparatchiks that we're going to expand. China's now recovered. We're back on top, and we're going to pay back. Well, there's a long list of people to pay back: Europeans, Japanese, nationalists, you know, those Vietnamese that need a lesson, maybe the Americans, and we're just going to show who's tough in this yard. Well, that kind of attitude's getting some pushback. At least that's the argument I made in that column.
Jim, one of the things that I think we've been covering since the very beginning of Strategy Page, and that is China's buildup of their Navy, and where is that at right now?
Well, it's slow but steady. Now, what they've been doing more than anything else is trying to acquire naval technology. They are a major shipbuilder in the world, although they tend to build, you know, the less complex merchant ships. And they're still fighting with South Korea for the, you know, the title of the largest, you know, shipbuilder in the world. China started from a very low level of industrial knowledge. 100 years ago, they hadn't really even started the Industrial Revolution yet. And they didn't really get started until, you know, 50 years ago. And they didn't really make a lot of progress until Mao died and Deng Xiaoping and other reformers came along and said, well, let's try a market economy. Now, that's changed everything, but it's not changed it fast enough. Now, something else I should mention, one reason why Strategy Page runs a lot of items concerning China is because China is on everyone's mind. Although we try and, you know, be the man from Mars as far as looking at military, you know, affairs, we are basically subject to the, I wouldn't call it whims, but the enthusiasms of the mass media and most people, people in general. I mean, basically people are, their attention is directed by what they constantly see before them. And I know for a fact, as we all do, from just looking at the numbers, as it were, that you put China in the title of any item, more people are going to look at it. I've actually tested that. I've put an item out there without China in the title, and then later in the day, I slipped China in, and bingo, there was a spike. That's happened several times. So that's a reproducible event. What we do try and do is, again, have a more realistic, look at what's happening in China. China is becoming a military superpower, but they're doing it in ways that we don't really, you know, recognize. Although we keep hearing stories about China's Navy is building, it's building very slowly. You know, they have one of the small, in terms of naval power, they have one of the smaller navies on the planet. A lot of their ships are basically Coast Guard. They don't have it at an independent Coast Guard. Actually, they have a melange of protection services, border guards, and what have you. But what we would consider a Coast Guard is basically done by their older or less powerful warships. Their submarines are not very good. They've had some embarrassing accidents at sea. As we pointed out in an article recently, one of the best training opportunities for the Chinese Navy has been their participation in the Somali Anti-Piracy Patrol. They've been sending one or two destroyers or frigates off to there every 4 months. It takes 2 weeks each way of steaming, which is a great exercise for their sailors who rarely go that far from the coast. It was big news in the last few years that they went as far as Okinawa. Now, they stayed in international waters, but, you know, the Japanese went ballistic. They said, oh, my God, Chinese warships off Okinawa? That had never happened before, for several hundred years, actually. But as far as being a naval power, they ain't there yet. Indeed, as far as being any kind of military power, they ain't there yet. As a nuclear power, they ain't there yet. They cannot hit us with nuclear weapons. They might hit part of Alaska, which is bad news for Alaskans. And they might hit part of California, which is good news for a lot of Americans. But basically, they can't hit most of the United States with their nuclear weapons. Their nuclear deterrent was initially built to deter Russia, and it still does that. They don't say who their nukes are aimed at, but to the math, who's the biggest threat? And why do they only have maybe 100 nukes, you know, in warheads? They have 1,000 ballistic missiles aimed at Taiwan, but as far as we know, they're all, you know, conventional, you know, warheads. So they are not. They're an economic superpower with many, as Austin was pointing out, they have problems with oil. And that's the big reason why they're so intent on grabbing control over all those little islets and reefs and what have you in the South China Sea, so they can claim there's a lot of shallow water in that area. There's a couple of trenches, but a lot of it's shallow water, which is golden for exploring for gas and oil. And they basically say it's all theirs. And that is causing a lot of unrest in the area, as Austin detailed. But it's also causing, creating an arms race. We ran a piece recently pointing out that East Asia now is spending more on defense than Western Europe. Now, that's the first time that's happened in, well, I don't know, hundreds of years. China was last a military superpower about, you know, 300 years ago. And even then, I think Europe is probably outstripping them, you know, in military expenditure. So there are revolutionary things going on here, but mainly for economic and not military reasons. China does not want a war. They talk a big game, but that's mainly for propaganda purposes. The government, you know, we must not forget that China is a communist police state. They rule with a rather soft touch as long as you keep your mouth shut. And most Chinese will tell you that. I think Chinese tell me that. It's just, yeah, as long as you don't talk politics, you can do pretty much whatever you want, including some quasi-legal things. That's why there are so many scandals, economic scandals, scams or what have you, you know, selling bad, polluted, you know, poisoned food, as it were, again, the only people who get nailed, who can't bribe their way out of that, are the ones who are basically like the one bunch of yo-yos were selling bad formula for babies, and babies died. Now, that's always bad news, no matter where you are. And a couple of people got executed for that. But a lot of other corruption goes on that basically are economic, you know, business-type scams that, you know, people get caught and they talk or buy. They have connections. You know, they Chinese have several words for that. And you can get out of it. The last thing they want is a war, because that will hurt the economy more than anything else. China is mostly a trading nation. Now, foreign trade is not a huge portion of their GDP, but it drives everything else. The people are not spending money. They're saving it, because China does not have any social safety net. They never really did. During the communist period, they said they did. But one reason they went with the free market was that, you know, the people running the country realized that people were waking up to the fact that, you know, the iron rice bowl was rusting to pieces. There was no safety net, and the only way there was going to be one was if there was a more robust economy. So it's basically a myth that China, you know, wants to become a military superpower. They're just simply not doing it. The technology they're stealing, the new weapons they're developing, and there are a lot of, you know, weapons manufacturing companies, it's mostly for export, to make money. It's hard to make money selling to the government, because the government basically won't let you play games with the prices. So that ideally you want to sell your weapons to farm markets. And you go or just go to the web pages for any of these arms expos and what have you, and you'll find out year after year China is a bigger and bigger presence, and they've been a big presence for over two decades. Anything you want. They've always got new stuff, and not just from one manufacturer, often from half a dozen. Now, a lot of it, indeed, is cheap. A lot of it is crap, but more and more, it's good stuff. It's competitive, and that's what they want to do. So the last thing they want is a war. They're trying to bully their neighbors into giving them what they want. Of course, now the neighbors, as Austin pointed out, are getting together. They are also joining in with the arms race, and we did a piece, probably several actually, on how the United States is joining in, you know, as the, because we are indeed a Pacific power. There's no doubt about that. And that, hey, China hates that because we are the largest naval power on the planet, and we're shifting more and more of our Navy resources, you know, to the Pacific. And that gives China pause. And the last thing they want to do is take us on. Now, a lot of pundits say, well, 10, 20, 30 years from now. Well, you know, that's 20, 30 years from now. We have to live in the present. It's possible if these trends go along that China will be a lot stronger, but it's going to be a long time because China also has some serious fundamental economic and ecological problems and population, demographic problems, which means, you know, they're 10% growth a year. In fact, it's already stopped now. It's already down into the single digits, and they're facing a lot of financial, banking, et cetera, sound familiar, type problems. And so, you know, that big growth is probably coming to an end. They're going to have lower growth. Means are going to have less money. And the politicians, as the old saying goes, all politics is local. Chinese politicians, they want to keep the police state going because you have a lot of families, you know, thousands of families which have done very well economically. They are known and they are not liked, most of them. So they know if there were elections, that would be followed by prosecutions. So you have a situation similar to a lot of, you know, dictatorships. You know, think Syria with a more robust economy. Even in Russia, it's happening. And what happened in Russia is a middle class came along and they decided we don't want to live in a quasi, you know, dictatorship, which is what you have in Russia, even though they have elections. China doesn't want to try democracy at all. Even a lot of Chinese are afraid of democracy because they're afraid of unrest. Like I say, it's not just the leadership in China that, you know, wants peace, stability, and more economic growth. Obviously, most Chinese do as well. The government allows people to publish, including, military officers, books about, you know, the coming war with the United States, but that's mainly to use nationalism to keep the government, you know, the police state, as it were, you know, in power. So China has a lot of problems that are rarely talked about. And they don't have as much of the military power that is talked about. And I think people should keep that in mind when they, you know, take a look at what China is and what it might do.
Now, one of the things that they've been spending a lot of effort on is cyber warfare, correct?
Yes, but that's mostly for commercial purposes. This is going to be something that, you know, we're going to be ashamed of ourselves, you know, 5-10 years as more details come out. They basically stole us blind, stole our technology. But they were mostly looking for commercial technology. Now, a lot of these thefts are ending up in courts. It's going to become more and more embarrassing, as it were, because where it's going to bubble to the surface and become a major issue is when the media catches on that a lot of the lost jobs in the United States, you know, especially high-tech jobs, were lost because the Chinese stole the technology. And even though they were caught, you know, if you steal a technology and you start manufacturing stuff, the Chinese are very clever. They don't come sell it back to the United States. They try and sell it to places where, you know, people keep their mouths shut. You know, they don't allow American inspectors or Americans to see what you got there. But eventually it gets out. And the lawsuits follow, and, you know, it's becoming a bigger and bigger and bigger issue. And China just says, hey, it never happened. Eventually, that's not going to, you know, that's not going to be enough. And then it's going to become a big issue in America. You're going to see pundits talking about how many million jobs, how our unemployment rate would be down to below zero, et cetera, et cetera, if the Chinese hadn't committed this enormous theft of technology, mostly in the last decade. So, you know, yeah. You heard it first, that strategy page. You know, tomorrow's headlines today.
And I think if we look at things and where we've covered things and like that, basically the bottom line is China, it has become an economic power, and this is an economic war, not a military war that we're going to be looking at with them.
Yes, and that's the history of America. America was always been anti-military and anti-war. You can see this with the two world wars. But after World War II, we basically accepted the fact that at the end of World War II, we were half of the world's GDP. Now we're down to about 25% as the rest of the world, you know, got more prosperous. But, you know, most Americans at that point finally accepted the fact that, you know, we have to protect this because America is still the biggest, exporter on the planet. And, you know, without that international trade, you know, we'd be much less well off. And by the 1950s, Americans had accepted that. So we have to be involved. Now, a lot of people say, oh, we shouldn't, but we have no choice. It's the same with the Chinese. You know, as we explained again, again in strategy page, those sea routes from China through the Straits of Malacca, you know, through the Suez Canal and the Persian Gulf, those are essential for the Chinese economy and for the Chinese Communist Party staying in power. So that's important, and that's why you need more ships. That's why you need nuclear weapons. That's why you need, you know, all sorts of plot. But you'll notice the Chinese more often fight battles with paper bullets, you know, diplomatic, you know, economic threats, diplomatic threats. They are great students up there. They're ancient sage Sun Tzu. They're military theorists who basically pointed out it's much cheaper to win a victory, you know, by buying it than fighting for it. And the Chinese practice what he preached. And we tend to miss that.
Well, they've been very effective at buying up U.S. bonds over the last few years.
Well, that's not something they prefer to do, but they have no choice.
Right.
And that's sort of a devil's, you know, bargain. Because they have to, in order to, you know, maintain the trade. You know, imbalance as we were with the United States. You know, otherwise we stop buying all their goods and they have, you know, 100 million unemployed people, which is bad news even in China. But what does make that money effective is it gives them, they have an enormous pile of cash, which they can use to buy diplomatic support, to buy many forms of cooperation, and that's how they prefer to fight their economic war. It's basically an economic war. They don't want to conquer territory, except for the entire South China Sea, because they basically have a lot of territory. And well, all right, they have eyes on the Russian Far East, which they, for the record, insist the Russians stole. But the Russians simply took it because the Chinese were not exercising any control up there. But basically, they want to be able to trade. And for that, they have to have military power that can protect their trade routes. It's the same reason, you know, we got into the Navy business. Even, you know, before World War I, we were a major naval power, mainly because we were going into the 20th century, we became the largest economy on the planet. And it was mostly an export economy, not just raw materials, but a lot of manufactured goods. And that was a wake-up call to Europe, an unwelcome one. And, our government at least understood we need a navy to protect that. And that's never changed, and it's probably not going to change for many, many decades, maybe a century or more, you know, into the future, because China has a lot of economic, demographic, social problems, which are lying there just ready to go boom at inopportune moments, and that's right. What the Chinese fear more than they fear us.
Well, we'll be, I'm sure, seeing China on the page a lot for the next decade, most likely.
As long as they're attracting eyeballs, we have no choice.
All right. Well, we'll wrap it up there, and we'll talk to you guys later.
Take care.
Thanks. Bye.